Hi, this is Steve Chandler, and today I'm going to give you an audio companion to the book, Nine Lies That Are Holding Your Business Back and the Truth That Will Set It Free. This is a book written by me, Steve Chandler, and Sam Beckford. I'd like to talk about the nine lies one at a time. And as I mentioned, this is an audio companion to the book. I am not simply reading the book. This is not an audio book. It's a companion, a summary, a very brief reflection on the book itself. Lie number one is, I just need to know how to do this. Now, most people who go into small businesses and finally own a business spend most of their intellectual capital, their attention, and their thinking time on a question of how to. How do I do this? How does this business run? How do I make a profit? How? Now, the problem is, if that's all they do is think about how to do this, and if they think that's all I really need to do is think about how to do this, then the problem becomes it's not enough. Things are too shallow when we stay on the how-to. There's an area of thinking that's even more important than that, and that's what I call the want-to. It's a much more important level of thought. That's my intention and my desire and my drive to succeed at this business. I need to keep that tuned up. I need to keep my commitment to success and profit tuned up so that it's really at a high level of vibration when I come in the morning. If I don't pay attention to that and I don't have the want to in tune, the how to won't serve me. I'll spend all my time looking around trying to figure out how do I do this and how do I do that? And then problems will surface, and then I'll try to figure out how do I solve this and how do I hire this person? And pretty soon I'm locked inside my business as if I were a prisoner there or an employee there instead of owning it. Now, one of the beauties of owning a business is that you get to look at your business as a creative work. It's what Michael Gerber in the E-Myth calls working on your business instead of working in your business. The greatest mistake small business owners make is that they come to work every day and they work in their business. They don't work on their business. They just show up as if somebody had hired them to be a manager or an employee, and then they fight fires and solve problems throughout the day. They listen to complaints, and by the end of the day, they're exhausted and they go home, and they have been working in the business. This will not move the business forward toward a real breakthrough in profit. Time must be spent working on the business, and that's where the want to comes into place, the intention. Now, Sam and I are both business coaches, and we've written the Nine Lies book based on all the people we have coached over the years. And every time we sit down with a new business owner, the first thing we try to determine is what's the level of intention to succeed. Because if that's very low, it doesn't matter how much this person figures out about how to do this and how to do that. If the want to is not there, nothing will happen. Nothing good will happen. Because you can get all the technical things right and still just break even at the end of the month or lose money. Because all of these unexpected problems pop up and your whole life is based on just showing up for work, walking in the door, and allowing the world to kind of assail you and assault you with circumstance. And your life becomes about fending off circumstance. So it's not really true that all I need to know is how to do this. What I really need is wanting to do this, a level of intention. People who fail at business, it's usually not because they're missing some kind of technical knowledge. It's usually because their commitment to succeed has gone away, and it's been replaced by a mere desire to get through the day and to solve enough problems to have the business be okay for tomorrow. Now, that's a major mistake. How do we counter that mistake? Well, when I'm coaching someone, one of the first things I do is ask that person to start coming into the store or the business only 4 days a week instead of five. Most business owners and store managers who own a business are there all the time, and they're micromanaging, and they're fighting fires, and they've got their hand in everything, and they can't see the big picture. They can't have that breakthrough creative thought that would help them because their face is too close to what's going on. And most business owners, when I say, my prescription as your coach is to take a day off every week, at least for 2 months, and see what happens, they go crazy. They say, I can't do that. I need to be on call. You never know. I'm so needed there. But really what happens is they begin to rearrange their priorities. They begin to say, what's important to me? And then they take that day off. And on the day off, they work on their business, not in their business. And that's what happens. They go for a long walk by the beach. And in their mind, they're beginning to see the big creative picture. They're beginning to get a good idea of how I could make some decisions here that would alter the future of my business. And I hadn't thought of that. Most surveys show that business owners get their best ideas either when they're on vacation or when they're driving or when they're in the shower. Those are the top three listed times when people get their best, most profitable, high return ideas for their business. It's not when they're in the business fighting fires and solving problems. So therefore, why wait until you're on vacation 6 months from now to get a great idea on how to recruit better people or how to manage your business better? Why not get it once a week, every week, when you take that time off for creative thinking time, when you're working on your business instead of in your business? And it really does work. I can say that for the last 10 years working with clients, that one of the biggest breakthroughs they ever get is when they start to take more time off. Now, it doesn't mean they just play golf or don't do anything about the business on that day. But what it means is they get away and they allow the subconscious mind, the right side of the brain, to contribute and start to give creative big picture systems thinking instead of the tiny linear left brain thinking that happens when I walk into the business and I'm just fighting with the tiny, shallow day-to-day problems. So again, the lie is, I just need to know how to do this. The truth is, my business will succeed faster when I pay more attention to wanting to succeed at this than I do to the technical system of how I would do that. Now, to finish this point on lie number one, I want to read how the chapter itself finishes, just a couple paragraphs here. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, quote, "Nothing great was ever created without enthusiasm," end quote. And so, to create a great success with your business, you invest enthusiasm. It's your most important investment. It's the key element in the mix. The word enthusiasm comes from the Greek entheos, which means the God within, which is the level you need to play at to win big. To succeed in business, you need to bring your highest, most spiritual self to work each day. It's that vital. Your mission is to make this business your greatest piece of work ever, your masterpiece, a monument to your energy, to your laughter and tears, to your heart and soul. From that level, you can fly. From that level, you can be so enthusiastic about serving your customer that you are continuously finding ways to astonish him or her. You can be enthusiastic about recruiting and hiring the best team of people alive. You look at all the wonderful ways you can acknowledge them and keep them in the game of pleasing your customers. You can honor their innovation and energy. And finally, you are enthusiastic about yourself. You have found your fun. You have become a success in life. As journalist Sheila Graham quite wisely said, quote, "You can have anything you want if you want it desperately enough. You must want it with an inner exuberance that erupts through the skin and joins the energy that created the world." End quote. Enthusiasm comes from taking ownership of your life energy. You know how to do that. You did it every day as a small child. Enthusiasm comes from despising that weak, meek little voice in you that wants to be a victim of circumstance. It comes from breathing deeply into your dreams and oxygenating your brain just as you did as an energetic, unstoppable child. Reach back and find that joy again and make this business your great masterpiece. Lie number two, it takes money to make money. Now you hear this all the time. People go around saying, well, did you put enough money in? Do you have enough money? It takes money to make money, you know, and everybody tells you that. But it's not really true. Sure, it takes a little money up front to get going, but a lot of people keep repeating that lie as their business rolls along, and they begin to think, well, maybe I need more money. Maybe I need an investor. Maybe I need a big loan. Maybe I need to put more in here. And they keep thinking in those terms based on the erroneous thought that it takes money to make money. Really, in a business, it takes a great day of business to make money, where people are interacting with customers, when there's a lot of wonderful product being communicated so beautifully that customers are excited, when there's a happy team working with you, when you yourself are enthusiastic and you have an ultimate commitment to the customer being happy and the customer repeating and becoming a part of a network and a membership of reliable repeat customers. All of that is what it takes to make money. It doesn't take money to make money. And this lie causes a lot of damage. A lot of times people will bring a big business loan in to keep them going, and the time that the business loan takes to cover up for the way my business isn't really functioning well is really a mistake, because it doesn't ask my business to make the money. What I want to do is ask my store, or ask my service, or ask my product to make me money. I don't want to ask my neighbor or my brother-in-law to loan me money, because that'll cover up all this time when I can't see what the mistakes are. I want to see at the end of the day why the business is not making me the money I want it to make for me, and then I want to adjust and make the correction. So when I'm demanding of my business that it make me a profit, when I'm holding it to that standard, then I can see things that I wouldn't see if a huge pile of money came rushing in and covered all those problems up for a while, and made payments and paid debts and got us out of a jam and dug us out of a hole and all those things we say money does. But really, what money does in most cases is postpone my asking my business to fix the problem. You see, my business is there to make me money. And that's what it's for. And that's the function of it. Sometimes we forget that. And we think that business is some form of fate or some kind of object that I can't control anymore. And we lose the capacity of that business to be a tool in life to make money for me. We don't ask it to do that anymore. And in my life of coaching and when I work with clients, many times they will make decisions that they regret about bringing in more money or spending more money here, and they attribute to money a power that they themselves really have. What they can't see is the answer is in them. I need happier employees interacting with customers in better ways so that those customers bring their friends and family in here, and so that those customers keep coming back and create a relationship with me that they like and trust. That's what I need. What I don't need is to put money and then more money and then more money on the problem. Now, it's funny how these lies get into circulation. They get out there and people just assume that they're true. Now, just do this as a test, if you like. Go to a picnic, go to a gathering where you're among people and you're just chatting about things, and allow the subject to go to business. And then just say, you know, well, it takes money to make money. And you'll see everybody nod, like, yep, takes money to make money. Mm-hmm. And it'll just be accepted. Now, the statistics show that 4 out of every 5 businesses fail. They simply fail. Now, why is that? Well, Sam and I, coaching small businesses like we do, have a theory that these 9 lies are the reason, and that these 4 out of 5 people whose businesses have failed are talking to each other, and they're talking to other people about what they think the theory of business is. And they will actually say things like, it takes money to make money. And everyone in the room will nod, and everyone will run off trying to find more money instead of trying to find the real solution. It doesn't just take money to make money. What it takes to make money is beautiful service, wonderful product, dedicated team, great database of customers and clients. I want to finish lie number 2, just like I did the last lie, by reading a couple paragraphs from the book. The way the book finishes: ask this question about all your daily efforts. Is this something that leads me to greater profit? Because then there will be a lot less taking of coffee breaks and reading the paper and talking about endless personal matters with employees, when you could be doing activities to advance the profitability of your business. There will also be a lot less of you, the owner, stepping in to do minimum wage activity at your business, a total misuse of your brain power and energy. Ask yourself to always be aware of 2 levels of consciousness in yourself. The lower level is just that mindless level of working inside your business and being very busy. But the higher consciousness level is the creative level of working on your business to make it make you more money. Are you doing something of high return value or just doing something? Most business owners operate at the lower, just being busy level of consciousness all day long. Day in, day out, he or she shows up and tries to work harder, but doesn't seem to be getting anywhere. They suffer from the delusion that they are working really hard. But if it's just low consciousness activity they're doing all day, they're eventually going to go out of business. So, respect your mental energy and keep noticing where it gets invested. Make your business make you money. Force it to. Don't fall for the old "it takes money to make money" small business lie. Even though you will hear it constantly from others, we've all seen the real truth. Small businesses that are very well financed are usually failing miserably. In fact, the businesses that were the most well financed in all of American history failed the most miserably. Those were the dot-com businesses. They literally had billions and billions of dollars. So, if it just took money to make money, those people should now have, in theory, more money than anyone has ever made. However, most of those dot-com companies went bankrupt because they didn't acquire the vital knowledge of how to get customers, keep customers, and inspire customers to keep coming back. And it makes no difference what industry you're in, either. No type of business is uniquely dependent on big money bailing them out. If you are reading this saying, "Well, my industry is different," you are wrong. The bottom line is that every business needs to know the truth about how to get and keep customers without outside money, and it doesn't matter what business you're in. Your strategy for getting and keeping customers, once it's in place, will be much more powerful than money. So, let's read on and discover some proven strategies to do that. All right, lie number three is, we just need to get our name out there. Well, that's really not all we need to do. I mean, it's great to get our name out there. And when we're someone like, for example, Hallmark Cards, we are getting our name out there. And Hallmark has put its name out there for years, and it's been a great benefit to do so. What we really need to do is get customers in here. It's not the name so much that is my assignment as the owner of the store. It's really the customer relations that I want to focus on. Because the name will take care of itself. It'll come later. It's already out there. What I really want to do is build relationships with customers so that they come back. They come back again, they increase what they buy, they become more knowledgeable about what's here. A lot of times customers don't even know what's here. So they come in for one specific thing, not realizing they could make many of their purchases here if they only knew about it. So that's where I want to put my focus. Not on getting my name out there, but getting the customers in. Lie number four. Experience will benefit me. Well, you hear people say that. They say, "Well, I've been in this business a few years. It should be getting better. I mean, I should be doing better than I am. I've been in it 5 years, 6 years. Maybe if I'm in it 3 more years, or if I'm in it another year, or if I get a loan and just hang on for another year, the experience of doing the business ought to benefit me." Well, it's not really true. If you're on the wrong road somewhere, staying on the road a long time won't benefit you. You're on the wrong road. And if your experience is the wrong experience, if you're hiring based on need only, not based on what you really want your team to be, if you're doing things that are wrong and incorrect and don't serve your business and make it stronger and more profitable, then experience will actually harm you. Experience doing the wrong thing soon becomes a habit, and it becomes a bad habit at that. So I want to push aside this nonsense that experience alone is going to benefit me. Experience will benefit me only if I'm on the lookout for making adjustments after mistakes, only if I've got a deep commitment to succeed, I've got an open mind, then I can be benefited by experience. But that's not really experience that benefits me. That's a real commitment to staying open to succeed. And people can do that quickly. That's another thing that people don't understand when they walk around telling everybody, well, experience is good all by itself. It's not. Because there can be someone across the street, a competitor, with almost no experience who succeeds. Well, why are they succeeding? They're doing all the right things to attract customers, to bring customers back. They're doing all the right things. And so it's not experience that will benefit me. It's doing what brings a profit. That will benefit me. Line number 5 says, lowering prices boosts business. Well, is that really true? That's not really true. I mean, it might cause a flurry of action. It might open up some interest that wasn't there to have a discount on something or a sale going on. But in the long run, it doesn't automatically boost business. In fact, it sometimes creates more harm than good. So I want to look elsewhere if I want to really grow my business and expand my customer base. I want to look somewhere other than just automatically lowering prices, because it's not true that that will boost business in the long run. It could create some traffic in the short run, but I'm not here to create traffic. I'm here to create wealth. I'm here to create a profit. I need to stay focused on what I'm here for. So I can charge a very nice, strong price for a quality product if I have loyal customers who love the experience of coming here and being with me, and who really love the service they receive. They're very happy to pay a nice price. So don't just fall for the lie that lowering prices is where I need to go because it's the only really reliable way to boost business when you need to. Not really true. It turns out not to be true. It boosts traffic sometimes, but you have all kinds of counterweights that you then have to deal with, and you have people wandering in saying, when's your next sale? Oh, you don't have anything on sale. We'll all come back. And you don't want to be that. You want to be the quality, the beautiful experience. You want all the big reasons for people to come so they don't mind writing a very big check or running their credit card for a very nice, sizable purchase. Because in their mind, they're not here just to save money. You're not the discount people to them. You are the beautiful people, the quality people. You are the relationship people, the people who create experience that they long for. And that's what's most important. And that's the damage that this lie can do, is it gets people crazy and makes them think that all people care about is price, and that's not true. Lie number 6. You have to be tight-fisted. A lot of times people go into business and they think it's just an automatic good business decision to fight for every penny. They think it's just automatically good business to not give this person a refund, but to give them maybe a 50% refund or a partial refund, or to get into a little bit of an argument with them. They think it's always good business to pay an employee as little as you possibly can. They think all of this tight-fisted approach is automatically good business all by itself. Anytime you can cut a corner here or cut a corner there or be tight-fisted here or there, you are benefiting your business. And what I want to say is, from all my years of coaching businesses, this is completely, absolutely not true. That more good clients and good customers have been lost because of a tight-fisted, fighting you for every penny mentality. More good employees have been lost because of an overly tight-fisted approach to employees. And it really doesn't feed the business. What helps the business, instead of just being automatic, knee-jerk, tight-fisted, is to create a culture of generosity so that the customer, the client, the employee, the partner, everybody feels a sense of generosity. There's a culture of giving inside the business, and people feel grateful, and it gives your business a sense of being generous. And that generosity is a tremendous plus. It's a tremendous advertising boost, word of mouth, urban legend boost for you as a person and for your business. Now, Nordstrom proved this, the great retail department store. They proved this. They were the only ones who would give refunds without question and treat customers like family members instead of fighting over every customer and thinking that customers were the enemy somehow and that employees were the enemy and that everybody was out to take my precious money away. That will be fatal to profit, is to bring that approach in. Now, I'm not saying that we want people to be reckless and just give everything away. There is rational sense to this, but a sense basically of generosity will always come back to serve the business. It will always create a greater customer loyalty, a greater employee loyalty, less turnover, less absenteeism, less tardiness in employees, and in the end, it makes sense, financially even, to be just a little more generous than was expected. Lie number 7, customers are hard to figure out. Well, that's just not true. That's why we call it a lie in the book. Customers are you and me. We're customers. We know what we want. We're not hard to figure out. We want to be served. We want to be informed. We want to be happy. We want to feel good. We want to be able to come back. We want to find a place we can trust. We want someone to do business with that we can trust. We don't have to have our guard up. We don't have to feel uneasy. That's not hard to figure out. But people that we coach, and when Sam and I come into businesses, and the business is struggling, just barely breaking even, losing money, one of the first things we see is this lie, that customers are a total mystery. Customers, you never know what they want. Customers are difficult to figure out. And we ask, okay, what attempts do you make? Where's your database on your customers? What do we know about your best customers? And they look at us like, what are you talking about? We don't have time to make a database. We don't have time for any of this stuff. And the truth is, okay, then we see the problem. Customers are very easy to figure out. Customers are just your mom and your grandmother and your father and your sister. That's who customers are. They aren't some kind of enemy or hassle or difficulty. And the minute I put up that psychological block, like they're hard to figure out, I start to lose money. I start to have a bad business. Now, the most dramatic businesses in the world, the most dramatically successful, that is, are businesses that go the extra mile to learn about their customers. One of the few dot-com businesses that really succeeded was Amazon. And that was because they had a burning commitment and a deep desire to learn all about their customers and create customer loyalty, find out all the books and all the music that the customers loved. So if I buy a certain CD, the next time that artist puts out a CD, I get a note from Amazon saying, did you know that they had a new CD out? And so that's customer knowledge. That's knowing more and more about my customers. That'll always work in your favor. Customers are easy to figure out if you communicate with them. And communicating with them is one of the best ways to succeed at business. Lie number 8. I don't need any help. Well, really. See, a lot of people running a business become real individuals. They become real isolated. They become real lonely and scared. And they say, boy, nobody really gets how hard this is. And I take my troubles home with me at night. I don't want to share them with my family. That's not appropriate. I don't want to burden them. And so I'm all alone with all these problems of mine trying to run the business. And someone says, let me help you. I don't need any help. I don't need help to run the business. I should be able to do this by myself. And so the ego gets in there. I should be able to do this. A lot of times when Sam and I are hired to come in and turn a business around, the first thing we ask is, boy, this has been going on for years now. Why didn't you get any help? Why didn't you bring a business consultant in? Or why didn't you get help here or get help there? Well, the answer is always, I thought I ought to be able to do it. If I have a business, if I'm the owner, I ought to be able to do it. I mean, they give you a guidebook, you ought to be able to follow it. And so there's this really misplaced loyalty to being all by myself and to going it alone. I should be able to do this. It's not true. Actually, if you're operating from that falsehood that I don't need any help, then what's happening is you've got a bigger commitment to looking good than you do to your own success. See, if I own a business, I want to be more committed to succeeding than to anything else. It doesn't matter to me if I succeed and got help and assistance by reading a book on how to succeed, or listening to CDs on how to succeed, or hiring a coach on how to succeed. It doesn't matter to me if my commitment is to success alone, how I do it. I can do it any way I want. I just want to succeed. I just want to hit a certain profit. I've put it up there as a goal, and whatever it takes, I'll do. Now, this whatever it takes mindset is beautiful because it leaves all doubt out. It leaves second guessing out. And I'll look anywhere I can for assistance. If I'm not making it on my own, I'll look for assistance. I'll let employees help me. Let's say I don't know quite how to do this. I'll sit with a couple of employees and say, what do you think? Now, most business owners don't want to do that because they think, well, that gives my authority away. I don't look like much of a manager. If I ask my employees, what do they think? It looks like I don't know what I'm doing. And do you hear the fallacy in that? What you're hearing is someone more committed to looking good, looking like they know how to do this, than to success. If I'm committed to success, I don't care where I get my assistance. If I'm committed to finding a certain building in town, if I need to know where the hospital is, and I stop someone in the park, and I say, I'm on my way to the hospital, do you know where it is? And this person points two blocks down and says it's right down there. It doesn't matter to me if this is a homeless person or if this is a business executive or a police officer. Why do I care where I got the help? I have a commitment to go to the hospital. And because it's more important to me to get to that place than it is to look good getting there, I don't care who I ask if they can help me get there. And people who have a real commitment to success, you see them reaching out all the time for assistance. They go on the internet, they find new ways to market, they find new ways to hire people, they find new ways to be with employees, they ask employees for help on how to build our customer base. They're always getting assistance. They're asking everybody with a brain, how would you do this? Because, again, the commitment is to the end result. It's not to looking good. Lie number 9. I am a victim. I'm a victim of circumstance. I'm a victim of things beyond my control. I'm a victim of how people have let me down. Whenever I enter into this I am a victim mindset, it robs me of energy, it robs me of consciousness, it robs me of creativity, and it does not serve my business. I always want to operate from an ownership position instead of a victim position. The ownership position is, what is it that I can do right now to change things? The victim position is, Oh, I wish things were different. I wish I didn't have to change anything. Why are things always this hard to do? That's a victim position. The problem whenever I play victim is that I can't help myself from that position. It's not that it's inaccurate. I can find some accuracy and facts in it, but that doesn't matter. What matters is it does not serve me to play victim. What serves me is to take ownership, to ask myself, what difference can I make right now? What could I do that would help? How can I assist? Where can we go with this? How do we take this event and make things better? All those questions will lead me back to ownership when I feel like being a victim. So the fastest road from victim to owner is to ask certain questions. When something goes wrong, I want to ask, what's good about this? How can we learn from this? What policy can we put in place that will prevent this from ever happening again? And those questions will move me off the victim mindset into ownership. There's a beauty in ownership, in that ownership expands my mind. It connects whole brain thinking. So I am using left and right side of the brain. Bicameral thinking is always more creative. People who think that way are more creative. They see systems. They solve problems faster than people who are stuck in victim thinking. So I always want to move off that lie of I'm a victim of circumstance. It's not true. There's always a lot I can do. And if there's not, I want to move to an area where there is. So the fundamental difference here in these two ways of thinking is if I'm an owner, I'm always asking, what difference can I make with any situation, with a customer, with an employee, with the future of my business? What difference can I make? If I'm a victim, my mind never goes there. My mind is stuck in an endless negative feedback loop, like a CD that gets stuck and just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating. My mind is stuck thinking about the difference I would like to make but can't. And just imagine how productive and creative you would be if all day long you're thinking about the difference you would like to make but can't. That won't get you anywhere. It won't create any kind of breakthrough ever. It will depress you. It will rob you of energy. It will make you not fun to be around. All the things that harm your business. So it's of immense practical value for all of us to learn to think the ownership way and come to work with an ownership spirit, looking everywhere at every moment for all the small differences I can make.